Welcome to Not in a Creepy Way. Tonight in the podcast, we're going to talk about the 2011 movie Source Code, which we're going to spoil the heck out of, and also we're going to talk a little bit about Trainspotting. So sit back and enjoy. As always, criticisms should be sent to eric@notinacreepyway.com and compliments to Brother J at notinacreepyway.com. Enjoy. So welcome. Tonight we're going to talk about Source Code, a 2011 movie directed by Duncan Jones, previously from the movie Moon.
Yes, starring Sam Rockwell.
Yes. An excellent movie, I thought.
Excellent movie, I thought, too. So it's Jake Gyllenhaal and Vera Farmiga. Vera Farmiga plays Jake Gyllenhaal's handler of this, apparently, this government program that was created to be able to tap the brainwaves of the last, I think, 8 minutes of dead people's brainwaves so that they can reconstruct their last 8 minutes of memories. So in the hopes that they can use something meaningful and, I don't know, alter, I don't know what the plan was, to be able to solve crimes from it, I guess.
What is the source code?
It's quantum mechanics, parabolic calculus. It's very complicated.
Try me.
When a light bulb's turned off, there's an afterglow, a lingering halo-like effect. You seen it?
Yes.
Of course.
The brain is like that. Its electromagnetic field remains charged just briefly, even after death. Circuits remain open.
Now, there's another peculiarity about the brain.
It contains a short-term memory track that's approximately 8 minutes long, like a convenience store security camera
that only records the last portion of the day's activity on its hard drive. Now, combining these two phenomena,
circuitry that remains viable post-mortem and a memory bank that goes back 8 minutes, source code enables us to capitalize on the overlap.
Sean Fentress died on that train. Of all the passengers aboard, he was your best link. You two share compatibility in terms of gender, body size, and your synaptic maps.
What happens after the 8 minutes?
After? Nothing. You cease to exist on the train. You cannot exist inside the source code beyond Fintress's 8 minutes.
Source code is not time travel. Rather, source code is time reassignment.
It gives us access to a parallel reality.
Basically, they have 8 minutes where he gets to beam into this guy's body and try to solve this riddle of who put a bomb aboard a train. And it's a ticking bomb plot because the bomb that happened on the train in the very recent past is the precursor to a dirty bomb in the middle of Chicago.
Right.
So he has to find out who did it so that they can arrest him before the other bomb goes off.
And so he's going back as one of the people who the memories were reconstructed, and he's in an environment completely reconstructed of everybody's, of the deceased people's memories.
Or is it just the deceased memory of this one guy?
Well, either way, I got that it was multiple people, but I could be wrong because I was so... Anyway, so either way, my points will be equally as valid. So
okay. Well, anyway,
Either way, if it turns out to be that it's only one guy's memories, then my anger will just even be exponential. So
what we have is Jake Gyllenhaal, who doesn't know what he's doing at all at this point. He thinks
right.
He's in some sort of simulator, and it's explained throughout the show that he has this 8 minute loop that he has to keep doing until he finds all the puzzle pieces to solve this mystery. But since his last memories are of crashing his helicopter in Afghanistan, he doesn't know why he's here. He doesn't know how he's doing the simulation, and his handlers won't really tell him anything because it's not important
right.
to the mission.
Right. They just want him to complete the mission at hand.
Exactly, because the mission is time critical, so he just has to
right.
be a good soldier.
They don't have time to explain it. They'll explain it to him later.
Exactly.
So just soldier on like a good soldier.
Exactly. So he goes into the simulation where he wakes up next to Michelle Monaghan, who is plays Christina, the love interest kind of thing, and he has a little conversation with her, and then from there he has to go on his own devices or his own methods of finding out who put the bomb on what. And
right.
at the end of the 8 minutes, the train explodes, provided that he doesn't do the right things.
Correct.
So this all leads to him... This all leads to him repeating this 8 minutes over and over again, a la Groundhog Day, where he eventually gets things more and more right. And by the end, he knows who the bad guy is and can save the day.
Right.
So it seems pretty simple there.
The premise is okay. I mean, then that's the kind of the basis of the movie. But so, are you ready to talk about my problems with the movie?
Oh, absolutely.
So, I only saw it once, and I can't imagine making myself watch it again. But now maybe I might have to, because you and I may disagree. But the premise is that he goes back in the memory of one of the dead people. However, the dead people is not the bomb guy. You agree? Disagree?
You mean the suspect?
Yes.
Yeah, no, his brain only matches the brain of this one passenger.
Right.
Who has this 8 minutes. My assumption was he's the only one that matches, so he only has this guy's 8 minutes to work with.
Okay, so there's that. So he's operating off of the memories of this guy, right?
Exactly. Sean Fentress is his name.
So point number one. He goes up into the guts of the top of the train looking in the ducts for things.
Oh, yeah. It goes off the rails right there because now he's doing things that the real guy would have never done.
Well, yes, and would never have knowledge of and would never have any vision of and never have any ability to have seen.
Exactly.
Nor envision.
Exactly.
So, I have a problem with that. So that was like the first thing that took me out. I'm like, wait a minute. How can he see things he never saw? He's imagining things. He's speculating things. They recreated an environment of things without his knowledge. Or it's the memories of everybody. And if it's the memories of everybody, then I'm not. So that's where I started to get. I was like, okay.
But you definitely do have to make a big leap of faith or suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, and that immediately took me out of the movie. But then, as if that wasn't enough, when he gets to the point where he pulls the cell phone out of the bomb that he finds, by the way, a bomb that he sees and knows exactly what it looks like, having never seen it before, and picks up a phone, and out of his supposed memory, is able to scroll through a display of a cell phone of numbers and names. Now, I don't know about you, but in this day and age, I can barely remember a phone number, let alone a whole list of names. I couldn't tell you how many names and numbers are in my cell phone, let alone could I reconstruct a list of them out of my dead head.
Okay, you're right. You're right. But in order for the movie to go forward, you have to realize that he has free will during these scenarios, and it's an interactive thing. It's not simply a...
And he has knowledge that he has no real access to have had knowledge of.
Because apparently the human brain, or this Sean Fentress school teacher's human brain, is a recording that records everything.
Yeah, which also seems implausible.
Yeah.
was that a comedic cough or just a cough?
No, that's yes, I agree with you.
Oh, I heard a cough like
Oh no, no, it's
sorry.
Just that you have to, if in order to get through the rest of the movie, you have to at least buy it this far.
And see, and I couldn't get past that. That was so, because they had made this a deliberate mythology, and I liked the mythology. They set it up so well in the beginning, and then they didn't follow any of it. They could have done a lot with the story, but they just shat all over it. And so I think that was offensive to me, because I'm like, you went to the trouble of the science fiction premise, which is a great premise. I like the premise of the movie. I wish I'd seen the movie that I was promised, rather than the movie that they wrote.
So what you're saying is that he should have, if he was able to go and be the last minutes of this guy, he should only have exactly the sensory inputs that this guy had. So he basically needs to do a Sherlock Holmes with just the information he has from his
right.
own little environment.
And I also believe that what they could have done, because they already showed, like, when he looked in the mirror, he wasn't himself.
Yeah, which is weird.
Well, but except that it was, I don't know, it was because if you looked in a mirror, though, you would see yourself. So in your memory, you would assume if you looked in a mirror, you would see yourself.
Yeah, okay,
except that he was taking actions that the guy never took. So how could the guy have gone and looked in a mirror if the guy would have had to have looked in the mirror for him to see himself in the mirror?
Exactly. So he would have had to perform every single thing the same way.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
And so, okay, so, all right. So that's one of the things. The other thing that is fine, okay, so maybe it's everybody's memories that were there. Everybody's memory that were there, they could collect all the memories and they could kind of collate them all together into this one unisphere where it was kind of this saw soft research area. Okay. And then I would have found it more infinitely interesting had he switched bodies and kind of gotten all the details, kind of Clue style, you know, here's the details from this suspect, here's the details from this suspect, I'm kind of correlating the data together, you know, da-da-da. That I could have bought a little bit better, because then you would have gotten a little more detail, because then he would have seen himself in the eyes of another person, for instance. You would have gotten different angles, you would have been able to see the whole train compartment. There's all those things that you could have done. And again, maybe that was a part of the story I missed, and maybe, you know, maybe that's true. But they didn't do that.
Yeah, no, they definitely did not do that.
And so I just, by the time the movie was done, I think I checked out well before halfway through the movie. I was done. So, and my rage was seething, so.
So you could not enjoy the
I couldn't suspend my disbelief.
Adventure of it.
I couldn't suspend my disbelief enough. There was just too many straws that broke the camel's back.
See, that's funny because I have a problem later in the movie, but I allowed them to take us this far. I mean, to me, that was okay. I mean, it's a goofy conceit anyway, but at least it's a conceit that once you see that he can move independently in this world, then at least you have to go with the 8 minutes.
All right.
Which, well, I think in the original script was 17 minutes, and then they figured out that 17 was way too long, and anything less than 8 was way too short to get anything done. But a lot of people have suggested that it was 8 minutes because 8, if you tip it on its side, is infinity and blah, 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 blah.
I think that credits them with more intellect, but maybe I could be wrong. So.
Yeah. Well, first of all, one of the things that threw me in the very beginning was that Vera Farmiga, I'm not going to be able to pronounce her name correctly, looked, because of her hairstyle, looked a lot like Maggie Gyllenhaal. So I couldn't get over the fact that he was talking to his sister.
Yeah, no, I hadn't connected those dots. But then I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan, so.
Yeah, well, and again, it didn't matter because luckily that wasn't the love interest.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the problems that I had. I thought everybody did a pretty good job as far as the acting part of it. I like
I like Vera Farmiga, and Jake Gyllenhaal's okay. I mean, he's not my top 10. But I like Vera Farmiga. I've seen her in, you know, I think you and I have discussed in the past, one of my favoriteest of all time short-lived TV shows was Touching Evil.
Exactly.
With her and Jeffrey Donovan, of Burn Notice.
Well, she was nominated for an Oscar, I think, for Up in the Air.
Yeah, and I love her. I mean, I really do. Yeah. I like her as an actress. So, you know, I watched it. I allowed myself sucked in to watch it, a la your mother's coercion, because of Vera Farmiga. You know, Jake Gyllenhaal, not so much. But
the part of the problem is, for me, where they jumped the shark or whatever, is as the movie goes on, through these iterations of the 8 minutes, which in an interview I heard with the director and Michelle Monaghan and Jake Gyllenhaal, they kept referred to these as independent source codes. Like they had to change every source code, blah, blah, blah. But my understanding of the whole thing is that it's just one source code. It's that 8 minutes that was on the guy's brain. Anyway, so that was weird. So the actors clearly had a different grasp of the facts than I did. At the very end of the movie, he finds out who the bad guy is and arranges things so that the bad guy gets caught, and that works out well. And then when he finds out that he's not dead, but he's basically on life support, he asks them to unplug him, which, of course, nobody had any intention of doing, except the soft-hearted Vera Farmiga, who's going to unplug him at the end. But he does make one last request, and that request is to go into the simulation and do it correctly. Even though he's been told time and again that anything he does in the source code has no relevance to reality. They make it very clear that he's not time traveling. And then they set out to break this rule immediately. As soon as he goes back and saves everybody on the train, and he ends up kissing the girl at the 8 minute mark, they should have unplugged him, credits roll, you know, that remains completely faithful to whatever this conceit is. Are you with me so far?
Yeah. Okay. No, I was just listening.
All right. So, here's the problem, though. At the end of that, time continues on, and he takes Michelle Monaghan down to the Bean in Chicago, and they have this little like love thing, like he's going to go on and inhabit his life. And he then sends a text message to Colleen Goodwin, the Vera Farmiga character, who then in this separate reality that they have now created, apparently, the source code project hasn't started yet. They have not done a successful one because this was the first successful one. So he sends her a text message and basically says, don't unplug me.
If you're reading this email, then source code works even better than you and Dr. Rutledge imagined. You thought you were creating 8 minutes of a past event, but you're not. You've created a whole new world. Goodwin, if I'm right, somewhere at the source code facility, you have a Captain Coulter Stevens waiting to send on a mission. Promise me you'll help him. And when you do, do me a favor. Tell him everything is going to be okay.
I don't know. It was weird because it seems like at this point, if the military guy that was basically his brain now is permanently inhabiting the body of this dead guy, what happened to the dead guy? I mean, if it's an alternate time stream, and granted, time travel movies have problems anyway, but if it's an alternate time stream, then what happened to the guy? I mean, it begs a weird question. It does hold out under a certain logic, and the logic is this. Quantum Leap logic. Jake Gyllenhaal is Sam in Quantum Leap, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that roughly it?
Yeah.
And
the ability to jump around on his own, of course.
Well, no, but with assistance. So all this government stuff and the mad scientist, nutty professor, absent-minded professor is what I mean, with the crutches. I thought that was a little weird. He wasn't, you know, I don't think that was necessary to have a goofy scientist character. At the end of it, when during the successful mission, the last source code run through where he saves everything, he also manages to call his dad and like make peace with his dad, who was told that his son was killed in action and they had left on bad terms. I suppose you didn't catch who his dad was.
No.
Hello?
Donald Stevens?
Yes.
My name is Sean Fentress.
Who?
I served with your son, Coulter. It's, I'm sorry it's taking me so long to call you. Sometimes it just takes a while to figure out what you want to say. You know?
Don't be too hard on yourself. I imagine it's not an easy call to make.
How are you doing, sir?
All that came back was some ash. It's hard to believe that it was him. How well did you know him?
I was there when he died, sir. He said that the last time that you guys talked, was, tough. And, he wanted to say that he was sorry.
I just want him back.
Scott Bakula.
Oh, for love of God.
Yeah. So they knew that this was a Quantum Leap thing. From the get-go. And they've talked about making it into a series.
The movie series?
Yeah. Because it would be the Quantum Leap, like a TV series. It would be the Quantum Leap for the 2010s.
Oh, I would have to kill myself. Oh, I was so much better before that knowledge. Thank you for ruining my evening.
Yeah, well,
That just makes me want to peel my skin off and roll around in rock salt.
Well, luckily, most shows don't get off the ground anyway, so I wouldn't be worried about it too much.
There's so many good things that never get made, and then there's this that got tons of money, and I'm fairly certain it flopped. I don't imagine it made a lot of money.
Oh, you know, I should find out, but I didn't research that part of it.
Oh, you can insert that later.
So. Yeah, it seemed to be fairly well received, though.
I suppose. I mean, but yeah. Anyway, but yeah. So no, I thought about watching it again for like 30 seconds, and then I was like, no.
So you're giving it a big thumbs down then?
Yeah, I would. Yes, I would thumbs down. I mean, unless you are incredibly able to suspend your disbelief and you just love everything science fiction-y all the time, then knock yourself out. But if you have the slightest bit of critical mind when it comes to details, it's, if you're like me, it's like that threader, that thread in a sweater where you just pull it a little bit and then the whole thing starts to unravel and you can't stop and the next thing you know, there's no sweater.
So what you're saying is that if you're an obsessive compulsive science fiction nerd, then maybe you should steer clear of this one.
Well, again, it depends on the type of science fiction nerd you are. Because there's some science fiction nerds that will watch everything, regardless, because it's science fiction-y.
Yeah, well, I'm that way with horror movies. With horror movies, I suspend all disbelief, everything is fine.
Yeah.
And it has to be really egregious for me to just turn it off.
And that's an ability you have that I admire that I lack. So had I had that ability, I would have enjoyed this movie. I do not have that ability. If anybody listening has that ability, knock yourself out if they haven't seen the movie. Of course, now we've probably ruined it for them. Or maybe somebody else will have a better opinion, in which case I'm happy to take somebody else's opinion and under my advisement and maybe re-inform my opinion and even maybe change my opinion. But at this point, You certainly didn't give me ammunition to the contrary. You just added fuel to my fire, especially with the Bacula thing. So.
Well, and, you know, life is too short to watch these level of movies again and again. I mean, this isn't worthy of a rewatch from me. It was fun to talk about.
There's so many other better movies that I should watch again haven't.
Speaking of which, okay, you also wanted to tell me a Trainspotting story, and I actually watched Trainspotting again to prepare for this story.
Okay, awesome. All right. Because I've watched it recently, too, and I had forgotten. First of all, I had forgotten how short a movie it was.
Oh, yeah, it's just barely 90 minutes, right?
Yeah, but it seemed much longer when I saw it. Much, much longer. And let me digress. So I had just moved to Portland. I don't know, do you know what movie, what year Trainspotting came out?
I want to say it's 93 or 92. It may be 96, though. Which would have put it right in your wheelhouse for moving to Oregon.
1996.
Yeah.
So I would have just moved to Portland because I moved in September of 96. So I had just moved to Portland. I'm pretty certain I was living in my apartment. So it must have been later in the year. But I digress. So one of my friends, who I won't name out of respect, but I will describe her as a incredibly sheltered and devout person.
Devout religious?
Yes.
Okay.
Her family was, her not so much these days, but her family very much, very, very, very strictly devout.
Okay. But
very faithful.
But not in a creepy way.
Not a creepy way. No. They're great people. They're good people. And she had been going to college in Washington and close to here, close to Portland. And as it turns out, she had actually moved to Vancouver and was kind of living with a boyfriend. I don't know if they were serious or anything, or even if he was just a friend who happened to be a boy. But they'd invited me over for dinner, and we were hanging out, being social. And
so let's just call them Glenn and Margaret.
Okay, so Glenn and Margaret. Margaret had said, "Hey, why don't we meet up and let's go watch a movie? Because you know we haven't hung out in a long time. We can meet." And I said, "Okay." Well, I hadn't lived in Portland for very long, and she hadn't really been in Vancouver very long. And I said, "Well, there's this big mall here, and we can meet there because it's a big landmark, and I think both of us can get there." And this, of course, was '96, before the days of, you know, handheld GPS and MapQuest, and you know, it was a lot of, you know, I had a Thomas Guide of all things.
Does the mall? Does the name of the mall sound like a venereal disease?
No, it's the Lloyd Center Mall.
Oh, okay. I was thinking it was going to be a Clackamas reference.
The Clackamas Town Center. No. It was the Lloyd Center Mall Theater. Not to be confused with the Lloyd Theater, because that's right across the street from the mall, because really what you want is like 25 auditoriums all in a row. But so we met at the mall, and we went up to the box office, and we hadn't done any research, and we didn't know any of the movies, and so we thought, hey, well, there's this looks like it could be a funny movie. And so, hey, let's go watch this movie. And so it was Trainspotting.
Yeah. You know, it's about trains. How could it be bad?
Well, and Ewan McGregor. I thought, well, that'd be hilarious because I like Ewan McGregor, and why not?
Well, had he been in much before this? Was he already the handsome guy? Because this, I think, is the thing that first...
I think I'd seen him in something, but maybe I could be mistaken. I could be misremembering. You know, I'm old.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And again, he's been around doing lots of things. And Robert Carlyle has been in a bunch of stuff too. But I don't know whether he was on my radar until Trainspotting either.
Yeah, I'm not absolutely sure. But so we picked this movie, and of course, the first like 10 minutes of that movie are, I don't have a proper adjective to describe the toilet scene alone. It
sets the stage for some wackiness coming.
And it's not a funny movie. I mean, it's a dark comedy, I guess, but it's not a funny. It's not a glamorous movie. I think it's probably a fairly, I don't want to say accurate representation of heroin use, but I believe the consequences suffered by some of the people in the movie are probably fairly realistic in as much as a movie portrayal.
Yeah, I don't think it's a comedy at all. I mean, there are some funny moments to it, but it is. I think it's definitely, to me, it's more of a like a slice of life drama.
Right, and so, but I think Netflix classified it as like a comedy drama. Except I'm like, I don't. It had funny parts, but I don't overwhelmingly remember it being a funny movie. But so she and I sat through this movie, and of course, like I said, it seemed like a much longer movie to me, probably because I was sitting next to my friend who I knew was going to be way more uncomfortable than me, having probably never seen anything to this depth in her lifetime.
And yeah, because it didn't pull any punches. It was gritty.
Oh, no. It was very... it was a very raw kind of no holds barred movie, and don't get me wrong, it was a fantastic movie. I think I would have enjoyed it more had I not seen it with her.
Well,
and that's
yeah,
not a fight against
a that.
It's not a fight against her. It's just I was uncomfortable for her, and so we sat through this movie, and I remember at the end of it, we were like, okay, well, I'll talk to you later, and then it was like we just decided we were done for the day, and we just. Went our own separate ways for a couple weeks. So the moral I get from that is that when you're going to go to a movie with somebody, it is very, very integral that perhaps you do a little bit of research as to the movies that you might want to watch, rather than just picking one at random based on, I don't know, the movie posters.
Well, I don't know, some of the best times I've had at the theater, like Pulp Fiction, like Sixth Sense, you know, I didn't know very much about it at all. But you are going to run into a Trainspotting, most definitely.
And again, I don't want anybody to think it's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's a great, fantastic movie.
You know, I guess it has the elements of a comedy because he's funny as the narrator to it, and there are shit jokes.
Oh, and there's lots of jokes, I think it was probably at the time it was pretty in your face.
Oh yeah, it's still in your face. I mean, when I watched it this earlier today, you know, I was like, oh, this is grimier than I thought.
Oh yeah,
not just because you know all the guys look really rough. You know, I mean, it's not your suave Ewan McGregor. It's not even Ewan McGregor from A Long Way Round, where he's all scruffy because he hasn't shaved, but it's still suave Ewan McGregor. This
right,
is
no,
skinny
they,
attic
they
looking.
Actually look like heroin junkies.
Oh, absolutely.
So whether or not they, you know, I don't know what they were doing, and I assume it wasn't heroin because most of them are so successful, but my God, you know, it was a great movie, but not one I recommend seeing with a long-lost friend who is a little more probably sheltered than you were.
Yeah, although now, I mean, I don't know how long that Glenn and Margaret lived there, and I'm sure I can only guess that Glenn is no longer with Margaret or vice versa. But
no, she's actually Margaret is now married to a nice man with, and they have a child, and she's actually living overseas.
Oh, excellent. We'll call him Reginald. So sure. Margaret and Reginald are living overseas. You know, good for her. And, you know, living in the Pacific Northwest during that time, it was probably a nice introduction to heroin.
Well, yes, I suppose. As much as anyone really wants an introduction to it.
Well, you know, a prominent problem in the community. Well, although now it's chased its way up here. Yeah, heroin's been really popular here the last several years.
Well, it's apparently cheap and plentiful here, so.
Yeah, well, here too.
Of course, it doesn't get as cold in the streets here, so.
Well, yeah, there's that, but no, it's just people overdosing because the quality is hard to control. You have no idea how pure what you're buying is, and anyway, it's very problematic. Now, if they had heroin dispensaries, I'm just saying.
I don't know. Pharmacies don't like the competition.
Well, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now all the cool kids are doing pharmacy drugs anyway.
Well, you know, methadone is just heroin. So.
Exactly. What's on the agenda for, say, next week?
What would you like to? What course would you like to steer? I steered this week, so.
Okay. Oh no, I have a suggestion.
All right.
Big Trouble. Are you familiar with either the book or the movie?
No.
Okay. It's written by Dave Barry. The book is.
Dave Barry, like Dave Barry, Dave Barry.
Yes. Yeah, Dave Barry, the columnist.
And oh dear.
It's a movie starring
Tim Allen
and Rene Russo, but it has all-star cast.
Okay.
It is like the Galaxy Quest of its time, of its genre. It was a hilarious book. I loved the book. I've listened to the book on audio many, many a time.
All right.
Anyway.
Well,
okay.
I got my assignment for next week. If you think of anything else, feel free to email me.
Excellent. Well, thank you again, Brother Jay, for being on the program.
Absolutely. Vitamin E. Have a good night.
It's fat soluble and it'll make you all better. I'm just saying.
There you go.
Okay. Talk to you later. So that's our podcast. Thank you again for listening to Not in a Creepy Way. My name is Eric Anderson. On behalf of myself and Brother Jay, we wish you all a good night. As always, compliments should be sent to Brother Jay at notinacreepyway.com and criticisms to Eric at notinacreepyway.com.